It's Thursday, 13th of August, and you're listening to the Game Grin Grincast. My name is Hamiltonius, and I am joined by a slightly reduced team here today. I'm joined by just Ace and Cal, and today is going to be a nice quick episode because everyone else isn't here. And also, it's post-Gamescom. So our main topic for today, and the topic that we will be discussing for the next half an hour, is is Gamescom necessary? Do we really need it or not? And I suppose we should jump straight in with the fact that some of the games announced at the event weren't that interesting or really anything to get too hyped about. What do you guys think?
Well, in our last episode, we discussed the fact that there are a load of expansions announced, and apart from the new one from Hi-Rez, Paladins, I can't think of a new title that was announced at Gamescom.
Yeah, there was nothing new, to be honest with you, that was shown off. Everything we saw, or what was announced, was already shown off at E3. It was just more of that. It's like, we announced it at E3, but we're not going to show you it until Gamescom.
Is that what Gamescom is reduced to now, do you think? Just the after party to E3?
I suppose in some ways. I mean, didn't it used to be bigger than E3 at one point?
Well, yeah, because it allows some members of the public in instead of just the press.
Yeah, it's true. I think there's too many games conventions, but then again, that's been me miserable because I can't go into any. The only one I went to was EGX.
And no one knows what EGX is.
Isn't that the one in Birmingham next month?
It is the one, yeah, but it used to be, well, the one I went to was in London before they decided to knock it down, move on. It's Eurogamers Expo, I believe, sponsored by Virgin Media. And that was just literally, you just go in there and it was just loads of people trying to sell you stuff. And there was a few stands to let you play some games. And there was one or two conferences, a couple of developer conferences. Got to see Assassin's Creed Unity crash, but that was about it.
Well, to be fair, everyone got to see Unity crash.
Eventually.
Yeah. It was just the start.
So it is, obviously a lot of the things we saw at Gamescom were basically just extended trailers of what we saw at E3. So, you know, is it sort of just the dessert? Do you think in the future Gamescom might just dwindle down to nothing? Or because, I guess because like I said, the E3 is for journalists technically, and Gamescom, I suppose, lets members of the public in. So do you think it just doesn't get the coverage it deserves?
Well, a comparable convention scene would be San Diego Comic-Con. That used to be all the creators, we got all this stuff coming out and blah, blah. But now it's a lot more diverse. It's a lot of movie stuff and junk, and all of the comic announcements have moved to the New York Comic-Con, which is a few weeks afterwards. So perhaps something similar is going to happen as E3 grows or shrinks or something. Are things going to move over to Gamescom instead?
I mean, I can understand the purpose of these. Obviously, you know, E3 is for journalists. Gamescom's Europe's sort of thing. You said, you know, obviously a lot of games are now just hitting, making their way to the comic conventions in America instead. And I can understand the Tokyo Game Show as well, because that's just all things Japan. But I know that there's the Paris Games Week, I think, as well, that's coming out. And that's the one apparently Sony's going to be at, because they skipped Gamescom.
And, yeah. And PAX is coming up?
Yeah, PAX.
So there's so many gaming conventions. When do developers say, oh, we'll announce X here, Y here, and Z here? Or do they splurge all at the start and have nothing to announce further down the line?
Well, I think it's also dependent on the release date of a game. I mean, obviously, you know, if you're announcing at E3 a game the new Shenmue or the new Final Fantasy, which isn't out for like 2 years, but some games you want to announce it with optimum time to build up the hype. I mean, the best time to release is at Christmas, basically, isn't it? Or November, December time. So you don't want to be announcing games in around times where there'd be like a chance that there'd be less hype. And also at events like Gamescom, I mean, if we go back to the idea of Gamescom being like the aperitif to E3, then no, if someone announced something big at Gamescom, people would be like, oh, okay, it's Gamescom, but it doesn't get near the same coverage as E3 does on things like social media and the general consent, general public knowledge. Like when E3 was on, like Twitter, the trending for the worldwide was everything that was going on at E3. But at Gamescom, I didn't see anything really on like that, even on the UK trending, for example.
Oh yeah, that I agree with, because with E3, it was just all over the place. It was all streaming all over Twitch, IGN, GameSpot. They had their live coverage, and there was bugger all of Gamescom. It was just like, check out Gamescom, yay! And I thought there was going to be something really cool. I thought Bethesda was going to have another conference or something like that, and I thought Microsoft was going to show off something really good. But I had to like properly search online just to see what was actually shown off from those conferences. It was just huge amount of trailers and gameplay footages that were shown off, but nothing really interesting, you know, announcement or news-wise. Oh, apart from a limited edition Halo console. Yay.
I think the two biggest announcements from Gamescom were Paladins from Hi-Rez and the new World of Warcraft expansion.
Yeah, that, of course, is the big old one. An expansion pack.
Apart from that, nothing. Nothing stands out. Maybe the Elite Dangerous expansion, but again,
sequels, expansions, and gameplay trailers.
So I'm actually looking at the list of the games that were announced at Gamescom, and it's just 90% of it is sequels. The only original IP I can see is For Honor, which was announced at E3.
Hmm. Not even, I can't remember, was Scalebound and that lot there? They were,
yeah,
or were they announced at E3?
Scalebound, yeah, but these are all E3 announcements as well.
Oh, I see.
We're just, like Quantum Break, for example, they said they weren't going to show it off at E3, so they've showed it off at Gamescom. And the same with Scalebound, they said the same thing. But all these, nothing brand new was shown off at Gamescom.
It's like stuff they've got in the back cupboard, basically. They were going to wheel out, wheel it out, give it a bit of a spit shine and go, there you go, guys. Here you go, Europe. Here's what you can try out. But maybe it's also like, I don't know. I can't profess to being a paid games journalist, but perhaps Gamescom is just a way for the journalists in Europe to get easy access to the games that they need to write their previews and articles about, because obviously, I mean, E3 is on the west coast of America. Might be tough to get out there and do, you know, get a hands-on. So maybe Gamescom is just sort of becoming sort of a utility conference even for the press, even though it is open to the public as well.
That's interesting.
I suppose it is one way of putting it, because you get so much more gameplay demos and trailers and all these extra pieces of footage shown off at Gamescom than you did compared to E3. You know, they made all these big announcements like Need for Speed, the new Mirror's Edge game, Dark Souls 3 and all those titles. They were all announced, but you didn't get any gameplay footage during E3. When Gamescom came around, you got your first gameplay trailer, or you got your first gameplay story trailer, or you got your first walkthrough of the game. So I'd say that would be one of the things, like it gets you excited for it, then you have to wait a couple of months, and then you can actually go there and see it, and if you are lucky, you might be able to play it.
Yeah. Probably it might also, the fact that it might give the developers a chance to get their shit in order, basically. Here's our trailer.
Now we've got to
create something that's more than just like a small level to show like a select few journalists.
Is that maybe what all the other conferences are becoming, like your PAX and your EGX? Because I know that EGX has will have playable levels from Just Cause 3 and Assassin's Creed Syndicate, amongst others.
Yeah, EGX was quite good when I went with the playable demos, apart from the long-ass queues, especially Call of Duty, the last one that came out. It was like a big old queue that went all the way around this giant curtain. But I did get to play Alien, so I was quite happy. But there were some titles there that weren't... They were basically developer builds, which were kind of rushed in. Like, they were showing off Dragon Age Inquisition, and you can clearly tell it was an older build, because it had... It looked like it had some missing effects, and it even had an FPS counter in the corner. So you're going, oh, well, that's a bit of an old build. And, of course, Assassin's Creed crashed. And I also saw Dead Island 2, which is... Well, as far as we know, has been put on hold because the developers have been dropped.
No, it's moving on with a different developer.
Oh, okay. I thought it was put on hold because they dropped Jaeger. Is it, who's making it? Is it actually Techland who are doing it?
I've got no idea myself.
I'm Googling it.
Google!
I have to...
Sort of all our information.
Yeah, you have to distract the listeners while Ace Googles it.
Vamp?
Who?
Just wave your arms about and draw attention to yourself.
Just keep chatting the word hobby grade.
No. I'm not saying that.
In July 2015, Deep Silver announced that Jaeger has been dropped from developing the game. Development will be moved to an unnamed developer. And now Jaeger has filed for insolvency.
Oh, interesting.
So unnamed developer, also known as we haven't chosen anyone yet.
I bet it's the guys who made Alien Colonial Marines.
Oh, God.
We could just take the money and put it into Dying Light when they actually lied about using it.
You never know, it might be Iron Galaxy who are getting it.
Oh, yay. I bet the PC version would be great then.
Does anyone really even want a Dead Island 2, though?
Well, they're trying to separate itself now. If you play Dying Light, it's kind of
Dying Light was like a better Dead Island.
Yeah, Dying Light was essentially what Dead Island should have been, and Dead Island 2 is kind of just going in its own comedic sort of zombie comedy direction with wacky makeup weapons. So kind of like Dead Rising, but as a first-person shooter. It wasn't looking too hot when I saw EGX. It had some proper frame rate problems.
Yeah. Dead Island, the original, is a fascinating example in marketing versus product. I remember how hyped everyone was for that game.
That trailer was awesome. I remember that.
Yeah. Anyway, I suppose to drag things back to Gamescom, I would say that another facet of why we need Gamescom is it's a whole different hype machine. If you look at E3, like you were saying, it's all announcements and we're going to be doing this, we're going to be doing that, here's our new features for all the journal. Because E3s are mainly invite-only journo fest. So you get people, the actual players get to read about it on their different magazines and formats and listen to podcasts and videos, see videos. But then Gamescom's their chance to actually have a look themselves and get to grips with the game themselves.
Pretty much.
And so you might get journo hype. And then you get hands-on hype, because if a game can build enough hands-on hype where people come back from Gamescom and they're like, oh yeah, I played this game, it was in an early stage, but it was really, you know, it was really fucking solid, and it seems really cool.
You find after Gamescom, I've been reading a lot more impressions of titles, especially on certain sites, so the people who have played Quantum Break, or they've played some of the other games that have been announced, they're saying, oh, here, I played it at Gamescom, here is my impressions of it. I'm seeing a lot of Halo 5 impressions now, and a lot of Quantum Break impressions. I suppose another thing as well with E3, it's for the stockholders as well.
Yeah.
That's so it's for them, mostly. It's for the journalists, and for the stockholders. To say, this will bring you a shitload of money. Call of Duty 20 or something.
Yeah, because they need to put that in public before the stockholders will believe that will bring them in billions of dollars.
Exactly. Mentioning Call of Duty just made me realise that even they attempted their own little games conference, their own show. They did, I can't remember if it was called Call of Duty Elite, but it was something along those lines. It was like a subscription service which you had to pay on top of Xbox Live, and they did their own live show where they made the announcements. I think it was around about when Ghosts came out. And that was dead in the water. As soon as that got revealed, people attended. it was shit. And that's why you don't get Call of Duty Elite anymore.
Hmm. Well, I mean, with a severely reduced lineup, there's only so many opinions we can shove out about Gamescom.
10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Would watch again.
Conference of the year. So some news that I actually saw today, I might want to bring up is that the I think I saw a 16-year-old boy, I guess, has become a millionaire thanks to a Dota 2 tournament.
Crikey.
I hate people like that. I'm jealous, but I also hate
you see the story. You think I need to start playing Dota 2?
No, you don't.
No, I don't.
Remember like Counter Strike and League of Legends. They all got their own esport. Heck, even Rocket League has been picked up by an esport. I think it's ESPN. I think picked it up, or one really? Of them places. Yeah, it's being turned into an esport.
See, I'm good at Rocket League. This is my chance.
See there?
How
you are.
Good?
We should band together.
I'm very good at Rocket League. For how little I've played of it. It's amazing how much actual football like tactics play into Rocket League.
I just hit and pray.
Like not just ball watch. We need to do like a Game Grin tournament.
We should.
If only so that we can shut up Ginge, who is, dear listeners, one of our members in case you didn't know. Who thinks he's God's gift to Rocket League.
Well, I scored 8 goals in one game before. I may have been playing solo against one other car, but offline.
Still a win.
But it was 8 goals in one game.
And they disconnected.
They've got the DLC now, staying on the topic of Rocket League. Came out today for PlayStation and PC.
What's involved in the DLC?
Oh, I can't remember. I know they released... a patch which had a new map, the Colosseum, which is quite good looking. Very yes. confusing, though.
It's got a Rome-esque look. The DLC, which is $3.29 on PlayStation Store and Steam.
Already bought it.
You get two battle cars, the Dominus and the Takumi. Sorry, 6 unique decals for each car, so 12. 5 new paint types, 2 new rocket boosts, and 2 new wheels.
Is the arena a free LC, or is it part of the DLC?
It's free with the patch.
Oh, I see.
And you get if you're a PlayStation gamer, you get some extra trophies out of it as well, which is always nice.
Yes, I've already got 2 of those.
Yeah, same.
One of my questions about Rocket League is how do you know if you're playing? Is the cross-platform actually working? Because I never know I can never tell. I suppose that's the beauty of it.
You can tell if you bring up the player list. If you're playing on Steam, then each player will have their Steam icon next to them. But if it's a PlayStation gamer, they'll have a generic icon.
Oh.
They'll have their PlayStation logo.
I've just got. I always just have like question marks.
No, right.
Over like the it's like a silhouette with a question mark on it. To be fair, I haven't played Rocket League in about 2 weeks, so I might be behind the times.
I've noticed with some of the people I've been playing against, they've got a like psionics on there, where their emblem is. So I think, they're a PC player. And also, if they've got a really long, stupid, random name, something that a Steam user would put, then you're clearly a PC player.
Yeah, I don't know what the character limit is for a PlayStation Online username. It's probably a lot less than it is on Steam.
I think it's about 13. 12, 13.
That rules out my username then.
And you have to put... you can't have spaces. So if you want to have a space in your username, you have to use an underscore. Which just looks silly.
Ah, nice easy way to tell then. If you're playing against someone with a space in their name, they're a PC player.
Back in the, this is going back a long time ago, because I'm an old man, when the PlayStation 2 was first getting online, you couldn't have an underscore on the PlayStation Online, but you could have a space. So that's strange that they've changed that.
So weird. I remember when I bought my first PlayStation 2 game that was online compatible. It was some fantasy RPG game. Not even RPG, like MMO. It was meant to be an MMO. In my naivety, I just thought if I just plugged my Ethernet cable into my PlayStation, I could play online. So innocent. Didn't realise that Sony wanted more money out of me than just the £40 for the PlayStation game.
Yeah, you had to buy some stupid brick thing that plugged to the back of the console, like almost like a modem to plug into it.
Yeah, it's like, why would you have an Ethernet port in the back of your console if you had to buy an extra peripheral just to connect to the internet?
Because that's Sony's way of making money. Because that's exactly what they did with... Well, not in the same sense with the network. That's how they'd save money on the Vita. They make their own proprietary sort of memory card, and you have to pay a fortune to expand your memory on your PS Vita. That's how they make up their losses.
Damn you, Sony.
But they've changed, man. PS4 was so good.
Shenmue, etc., etc.
Yeah, Final Fantasy Remake, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, so such audience pandering. I guess they're going to make more of that in their is it Paris? Their Paris show?
Yeah, they're ditched Gamescom and they're going to Paris instead. And they'll obviously be at Tokyo Game Show.
Is the Paris show just a Sony one then?
I'm not too sure. As soon as I saw the words Paris, I kind of avoided.
All right, Francophile. Francophobic, rather.
Francophobic.
Not Francophile. Thank God Farrah isn't here.
It's funny you should say that. He's just messaged me on Steam saying he completely screwed up the times.
Ugh.
No,
see,
dear.
This is why we can't have nice things, listeners.
And yet he still hasn't closed down DayZ to come
and join Fowler
us.
Because Fowler refuses to stop playing a game that's not even released yet. Just to come on, so he can come on the podcast.
A game he hates and has played 15,000 hours or something.
Yes. The man is illogical.
I can't really see much information about the Paris Games Week. If that is the right place I'm looking at.
To be fair, it'll just be like that thing from Family Guy where they'll, no matter what they say, as long as they say Final Fantasy Remake, everyone will just stand up and clap. They could be like, Hitler was an okay guy. And then there'll be a pause, and then be like, but Final Fantasy VII Remake, and then everyone will cheer. And forget the original statement. This is not me saying that Sony think that Hitler was an okay guy. They might think that Hitler was an okay guy. In case anyone's confused, listening to the podcast, Hitler was not an okay guy.
He was a very naughty boy.
He was. He was indeed.
Sony trades Gamescom for Paris Games Week, but does not mention
where
what
the Games
doing.
Week is.
It's the 27th of October starting. I thought it was sooner than that, to be
fair. That's quite far away, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is Microsoft also going to be in attendance?
No, I can't see anything about that.
So
Not the Paris Games Week, but I did hear or read somewhere that Microsoft might be attempting to do something for the Tokyo Game Show.
What a silly idea.
That's a market they've always had trouble with.
Why bother, in my opinion? Like, Sony's got such a monopoly there.
I could be wrong, but I did see some hints of it. I mean, I think they're trying to just try and broaden themselves out to the Asian market again since China's lifted their ban.
Oh yeah, that's true. But the thing is, I mean, I recently read about China is that there's no real point advertising home consoles to Chinese gamers because they'll only be able to be afforded by like the super, super rich. And most average Chinese gamers go to internet cafes where they can pay the equivalent of like a fiver to have like 3 or 4 hours time playing like Dota or League of Legends or similar games. I mean, and then instead, why would they bother paying for like, I don't know, I think it's the equivalent of like 600, 700 quid just for a games console when they could go out and spend more time at an internet cafe. That's what I read anyway.
I know, I did lie, I was wrong. Xbox are skipping Gamescom. Tokyo Game Show.
as you'd expect.
Yeah.
You'd imagine.
They definitely did give up then.
I was to tie the podcast into very recent tech news, what with Google deciding that it's not Google anymore, it's Alphabet with Google.
Alphabet.
What if Google made a games console?
They did already attempt it.
What if they made it another one?
Mm-hmm.
And it was Android.
Well, obviously
wasn't that the Android. Oya?
And it was really good Android.
Yeah, well, I can't remember now. When I was watching the Google conference a while back, they did some massive improvements to Android TV, and they're in talks of doing their own little console and their own controller and shit. The Ouya was just awful. No, it's a sad sight to see that.
Ouya was doomed from the start, even though it got a ridiculous amount of like backer money.
It was dead on arrival because they announced the spec of it when it first got shown off, and everyone was like, oh yeah, it's got an NVIDIA processor in it. Oh, it's got 2 gig of RAM or a gig of RAM. It's going to be really cool. By the time it arrived, everyone had moved over to like something completely different and far superior.
Well, the issue was that Ouya was like, oh, we're going to be the games console for indie developers. And then the following E3, both Microsoft and Sony were like, we love indie developers. We're going to have so many indie games on our new consoles.
Yeah, and now they're in a dispute over royalties because Ouya can't pay them.
Exactly. You can imagine the Ouya like executives or developers like sitting in a room just like face palming and hitting their head against the wall for something that was their unique selling point, completely robbed, the carpet pulled completely under their from under their feet.
I don't think Google would probably want to attempt to go up against the consoles. The only thing that would concern me is if Apple tried it.
But the thing is that no one thought that Microsoft would create a console until they did.
That's true.
Yeah. But they
Apple
weren't really that
Apple would not
big
create
until
a console.
The 360.
I don't think Apple would create a console because, one, they don't know what the fuck they're doing with video games. They've got no idea when it comes to video games. And two, they've already created their own little like segregated community in the tech world. And trying to like branch out and grab a whole other group of it just seems like a bit of a gamble, in my opinion. I mean, the only people who want to buy an Apple games console would be people who are Apple fanboys.
Surely that's their target.
But Alex, aren't you a...
What?
Aren't you an Apple fanboy?
I have an iPhone. That's literally as far as it goes.
Shakuse,
yeah. My work phone's an Android, so that's fine.
Well, I suppose you could try and have the best of both worlds.
When I started a job a few years ago, they on a trial day they gave me an iMac and they were like, "Okay, here you go, off you go, write some stories." And I spent about half an hour trying to work out what the fuck to do, just with the OS, because the thing is, I mean, my current flatmate loves Apple and Macs. And he says to me, oh, they're so simple, you know, they're so intuitive. And I think that's the issue, because I've grown up on Windows, and I'm used to the complicated way of doing things. You give me something within, like, a 1-2 step to get somewhere, and it confuses me, because I'm like, why can't I go to start, all programs, the program, then the setup, and then the... It's opposed to, like, pressing one... And also, there's no right-click button, and that...
Yeah, that was my first foray into the discovering Macs. I went to a Mac store. I went, oh, wow, these look really cool, started messing around with them. And realised there was only one click on the mouse, and I went, nope, done. Walked out.
That, and to make the at symbol, you have to go shift and two.
That's just stupid.
Shift and two.
Another thing as well,
that's
with
the American
iPad.
Keyboard.
American keyboard, man.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why at do symbol. UK Mac Kimbos? Why do UK Mac keyboards have that, then?
You think that Apple care enough to localize their keyboards?
Well, I am shocked and appalled. Why would you have shift and two as the at symbol, America? Why would you do that?
Because they try and make the keyboard like really compact and small and really stupid looking. And everyone says it's really ergonomic when they're typing away on it. It's like, no, it's not. No one wants a keyboard with chiclet keys on it. You have that for a laptop. See, I actually bought an iPad a while back. Ages ago, and some guy convinced me to get it, and he was like, yeah, get it, it's really great, it's really awesome. And I've never owned a device which has ever had dead pixels on it. Gone through TVs, monitors, smartphones, an Android tablet. First time I get an iPad, after 2 weeks of use, it has dead pixels on the screen.
It's because they're not quality tested as much as other devices, certainly Android devices. Because if the company that's selling them dares to open one, they have to send it back and pay Apple to repackage it.
That's just stupid. They need to do proper quality testing. But apparently, Apple use the best quality materials. I mean, obviously, it doesn't count for screens.
I mean, I would never ever buy a Mac. I mean, I have an iPhone, and it's nice, and all that. I think the iPhone is nice. I mean, I had an Android before, and I got an iPhone just because of it was in my budget at the time. And now I've used it as my phone for about a year. I recently got an Android 4, my work phone, and it seems like the clunkiest piece of technology I've ever used. But still, I would never, ever, ever, ever buy a Mac PC or desktop, ever. I love Windows. And also, while we're here, Windows 10 I'm in love with. It's amazing, incredible.
Yeah, I second that. It's freaking awesome.
Weren't you complaining about it last... I
said the only complaint was that I couldn't find the All Programs button, and then someone pointed out to me that was in fact the All Apps button.
All Apps, yeah.
And then when I found the All Apps button, I was like, well, hallelujah.
Have you tried Cortana yet?
I fucking love Cortana. Because I had a Windows phone about a year and a half ago for an old job, and Cortana is brilliant. She's so much better than Siri or OK Google, because you can ask Cortana like a random question. Like, for example, if I asked Siri, when's the next train from King's Cross Station to Finsbury Park, Siri would say, here are trains going to King's Cross, and not even say from where. And it wouldn't be actually the trains, it would be a Google search of trains from King's Cross. You ask Cortana, when's the next train going from King's Cross to Finsbury Park? And she'll just tell you straight away, the next train from King's Cross to Finsbury Park is this time.
Crikey.
And then I'm like, I love you, Cortana. And she's like, I think we should just be friends. And then I cried.
I read a recent interview about the voices behind Siri, the Americans and British ones. And apparently they had no idea they were working with Apple. To them, it was just another gig. So they're like, they hired them. And it's like, yep, do all this, do all that. And they did the job, and they were never told what they were doing, what the reason was for. They were just told it was just another, like an IVR or just another automated service. And then for them to find out, holy shit, my voice is on a million devices out there. I'd be like, but?
You could definitely have like a gig of just being going to a bar and chatting someone up and then being like, why don't you check Siri?
Oh, I bet the person who did the Siri voice gets it all the freaking time. He's probably called Siri.
Probably.
Just by his mates. Here's something you could search for if you get the chance, because it's a video. There is, you know the guys who made SoundHound? A little thing that you play music to or you sing to it and it picks up a song for you? Finds out what that track is?
Oh, yeah, like Shazam and stuff.
Yeah. And they've created their own version of Google Now and Siri. Called Hound, and it's like the most advanced freaking voice dictation, detection, searching, whatever that I've ever seen. It's unbelievable. But you just look it up. You just look up Hound on YouTube, and you'll see it's the Hound internal demo. It's like this guy just tosses it a shitload of words, like saying how far is this, how this, how can you calculate this, the financial rate, the percentages of this, and the housing market. And it just calculates all of it. Like, whoa. Yeah. The more you know.
Knowing is half the battle. And with those sage words, and at the risk of us becoming a consumer technology podcast, I think it's time.
Grin.
Yeah, tech grin, or something like that.
Yeah.
And also due to the fact that we're reduced capacity today, I'm afraid we're going to have to cut our podcast short, because otherwise we're all going to talk ourselves hoarse and then you won't have any podcast next week, or rather you'll have Fowler and Dom screaming away and us sounding very croaky and sleepy. So thanks for listening once again. This has been the Game Grin Grincast. I've been your host, Hamiltonius, and I've been joined by the lovely Cal and the amazing Ace Lister. And as always, you can catch Game Grin at www.gamegrin.com. You can find us on Twitter at GameGrin, or on Facebook, just search GameGrin. You can find us on our now defunct SoundCloud, which there's no point of you really being there, but you can search GameGrin. And you can also pretty much find us on anything if you just search GameGrin, such as YouTube and such. And also don't forget to check out our sister company or parent company, Game On Magazines, which provide magazines for a variety of different games around the games industry, and which feature writings from pretty much everyone on the Game Grin, and some stories by yours truly and the guys on the podcast. So it's been great to have you. Sorry that it's been short, but hopefully next time we will have a full hour-long episode. And as always, guys, game on.